Hello, I am Rosario Griffin, and this is an interview with Dr. Robert O'Brien from the School of Applied Psychology at UCC. And tonight we're going to talk about hive mind and mental health issues. Hello, Rob, and you're very welcome to the show.
Hello there. Thanks for calling.
Now, tell us, Rob, you're interested, obviously, in the whole area of applied psychology. How did you become interested in this area and also in relation to your area of expertise around the hive mind? But we'll come to that in a minute.
Hive Mind's just the name of my blog because I was keeping bees at the time when I set it up. Mm. How did I become interested in psychology? I thought I had a solution to a particular tricky problem that is around in evolutionary biology, and I thought I had a solution to it, and I was a school teacher at the time, and I approached a number of people who were big cheeses in the field. I said, this is my idea, and they said, well, it sounds like you've got the makings of a PhD there, and 4 years later I had a PhD, and I switched from being a school teacher to a university lecturer.
Wonderful. And how was that transition?
I really enjoyed being a school teacher. I like the sort of the one to one.
What did you teach? Sorry, in school.
I taught maths and I taught psychology.
Okay.
But the luxury of being a university lecturer is you get time to do research. Mm-hmm. That's a terrific privilege. You're given time to pursue your interests and people pay you to do it. So that's partly what the blog's about.
Very good. And so tell us a little bit about the blog then, Hive Mind. Where did the name come from and what was the impetus behind the whole idea?
Sure. Well, I moved from the UK to Ireland nearly 8 years ago now. And the blog is there really just detailing the work that I do at UCC, or the work that I do as part of teams at UCC, putting it into non-technical language. There's about, I think, 70 editions now, covering papers that we might have worked on, or studies that we might be doing, or projects that that we're engaged in that we'd like volunteers for. And it starts right from my PhD research through to what we're doing at the moment, which at the moment is some of it's connected to research into COVID.
Okay, let's go back a little bit. What was your PhD research about?
Right. Okay. So is this a family show? Because my initial research was I'm a sex researcher. That's I research human sexual behaviour.
Okay, interesting.
So I don't know how much detail you want me to go into.
Well, you can give us a broad overview. We can use our imagination, perhaps.
Fair enough. Okay. Well, my PhD investigated fertility-related functions of female orgasm. That was what my PhD was about.
Yes.
And that's still some of the work I'm doing at the moment. I've got collaborative work with we're hoping to get some collaborative work. I got a message from the other day with a fertility clinic in the Czech Republic.
Right.
And I'm working on a book about it, and most of my published papers are about what the adaptive function of female sexual response is in terms of increasing fertility. Yeah.
Yes, I went to a talk you gave once, actually, and that was exactly it. That was the point I got out of it, was that the whole function of it was to increase fertility.
Mm-hmm.
And reproduction
seems to be the best line of reasoning at the moment. Although I have to point out, for the sake of completeness, that is a contentious issue. There are lots of people who would disagree with me.
Okay. Well, do they disagree with you out of argument? Do they disagree with you out of ideological terms, like feminists, or do they disagree with you out of evolution? Because obviously your argument must be it's an evolutionary thing that that increases reproduction, whereas is a feminist are saying no, this is something different and separate.
It's a curious one, and I mean part of the problem is that that all around the world at the moment, zoos have had outbreaks of animals having sex and lots of little animal babies. Are you aware of this? Because the reason is that COVID has stopped humans going to zoos.
Okay.
And
I didn't know that. No.
Sorry, say again?
No, I didn't know that. I didn't hear that. Yeah, go ahead.
So even pandas, which are sort of famously unable to reproduce, we've got a whole load of panda babies all around the world. And the reason is essentially that human beings have stopped watching them. Yeah, and animals are quite private, in the same way that humans are. So an awful lot of sex research has involved taking the sort of people who aren't that private, getting them to reproduce some aspects of human sexual behavior in laboratories, and then measuring it. Now, I've got nothing against that research, mm-hmm. but it's kind of like the animals in the zoos. Most humans aren't like that. That's not what they do. And when they're sort of pushed into positions where they do behave like that, then you're not going to get the full range of behaviors. Mm-hmm. Well, that's kind of where I came in doing the research, suggesting that what we're going to need to do is to be a lot more naturalistic about our research if we're going to actually explore functions. So that's one bunch of reasons.
Mm-hmm.
Another bunch of reasons is, so that's sort of methodological. Another bunch of reasons why people are opposed to it is ideological. Humans do not like the thought that they are animals and that the same rules that apply to the rest of biology apply to them. And we're very uncomfortable about it on lots of levels, and we try and find all kinds of dodges to try and avoid the implications.
Very interesting. Very interesting, yeah. And actually, this, funny enough, links to a previous speaker that was on with me recently, who was speaking about the philosophical divide between humans' relationships with animals in terms of dominance over animals, or whether we should coexist in terms of environment. But that's an argument for another day. But I think it's along the same lines.
Sure. I mean, I think I'm not being a vegetarian here, but I mean, vegetarians say something very similar. They kind of go, well, once we sort of accept that to accept how exploitative we are towards animals would be to have to face a whole load of moral questions that would be very uncomfortable.
Yeah. Yes. Going back to COVID then, and because you mentioned that. Now, speaking about similar conditions, I was watching a program where they were saying, you know, how far would a person's droplets, you know, where the virus is in the droplets, and how far they can potentially go. And one of the arguments against the COVID theory about how many meters it can go was that it was examined under lab conditions.
Oh, right, yes.
Yeah, and if you put these people out in the open air, then the droplets almost fall to the ground immediately, making it just 1 meter would be fine in terms of social distancing.
Mm-hmm.
So is that something similar to your theory about the animals in the zoo?
Sure. I mean, yeah, there's in science, there's always a trade-off between realism and control.
Hmm.
And some situations are very realistic, but we have very little control over them. So that means that there's a whole lot of variables that could be causing the effects. And there's other situations that's why we have labs and put things in glass bottles and stick them under microscopes. Some things we have masses and masses of control over the variables, but the situation is not terribly realistic. Now, there's no general answer to which is best. You've got to do all of it as scientists. And this is why when people say, oh, we've got one study to show X, or one study has completely debunked Y, that's almost always nonsense. We build up a composite picture with multiple studies using multiple approaches, and this kind of winner-takes-all approach to science, which you often hear about in the media, really is very misleading.
Yes, because it kind of goes back to the whole idea of qualitative research being very complementary to quantitative research and vice versa.
Sure, yeah. Humans are, a species-typical feature of humans is they try to make sense of their world. Mm-hmm. Well, that's what qualitative research is about. It's about meaning-making. You know, and if that can't be included in the package, then we've missed a piece of what we're meant to be studying, sure.
Very interesting. Now, what's your take on the whole COVID situation at the moment?
Do you mean in Ireland or in general? Or?
Well, in Ireland, start off, and we can talk about the rest of the world if you want. Yeah?
Well, I suppose my main... I just want to stress, I'm not an epidemiologist.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just talking about being on the sort of the receiving end. I suppose my main comparison is with my country of origin, which is in the UK, which has made a dreadful mess of everything by really not being open with people, I think. There was lack of openness from the start, lack of acknowledgement of where it was, because there's always things we didn't know. I mean, and there's still things we don't know. But instead of sort of coming clean about all of those things, the UK government decided to take a position of sort of obfuscation and bluster. They've got They've got secret meetings. They've got scientists at these meetings who are saying one thing, and then next week they're saying another thing, and that's destroying public trust. And whatever the failures in Ireland, there's been an openness. There's been an acknowledgement where things have gone right, things have gone wrong. And for the most part, as far as I can see, the public has gone along with it. So we've got ourselves into a position in Ireland where we are opening things up again. And the public seems to be more or less going along with that. Whereas in England, as far as I can see, it's just a horrible, fatal muddle, really.
And from a psychologist's point of view, why do you think it is that we say the Irish people went along with it, and perhaps in England they took a different approach?
It's a really interesting question. We're studying this at the moment, but I think there's different ways of approaching authority. There's different ways of approaching running a place, and you can sort of stand over people and go, well, I'm bigger and stronger than you, and you should do what I say or else. That's a sort of the authority ranking model.
Right.
Or you can say, well, we're all in this together, and we're going to pull together. That's sort of communal sharing model. Or
right.
You can sort of go, well, we'll have a free for all, and you know, whoever is rich will come out of it the best. And that's a sort of the market pricing model.
Mm.
Well, roughly, you know, America took the market pricing.
Yes, I could see that. Even Brazil.
Mm-hmm. And Ireland took the communal sharing one, as did New Zealand.
Okay.
New Zealand, is, you know, if you look at Jacinda Ardern's approach, it's been very, very open, very communal. You admit to mistakes, you don't hide stuff. And that seems to have worked. Now, I mean, there's other variables as well, because, you know, in some places you've got islands, you can seal borders in New Zealand, but you can't other places, and all that kind of thing. But one of the bits of research we're doing is just really assessing the mood of particular countries following particular kinds of speeches, and looking at whether the sort of using things like Twitter as a bit of a barometer of what kind of mood people are in, and you can assess the emotional content of tweets following particular kinds of speeches. So we're having a look at that as a sort of from a behavioural point of view to see leadership qualities displayed result in what kinds of moods in the country, and we're sort of comparing Ireland and the UK and America and just sort of different geographical regions. But that research isn't there yet. That's ongoing.
Okay, yeah, because I can imagine you could look at a nation's response to, or public's response to, a clarion call to lockdown, for instance, from a number of different perspectives, either cultural, historical.
Sure.
Social, economic, you know, there's so many different variables involved.
Yeah, and I wouldn't pretend to be an expert on all of those simultaneously. And I suppose this is, well, one of the things I think is, but it's been done well, it's been quite good. There's been lots of opportunities to actually tell the public what we the scientists do, and also what we don't do.
Yes.
And I think some of those opportunities have been missed. You hear people say things like, "Oh, well, we're following the science."
Yes.
Yeah, as if the science was a big bunch of people who are all sort of all believe the same stuff.
Exactly, it's linear.
Yeah, I mean, it's ridiculous. Science is an attitude to data. That's what it is. It's a set of attitudes and methods to data. And it means that we're always a little bit uncertain. We're always sort of, this is our best guess. We're always sort of, it's always judgments under uncertainty, and it's always a composite picture built up of lots of different things. Now, that's unfortunately what I've just said is just not terribly sexy. What people want is sexy results, and also they like a narrative of a sort of David versus Goliath, the idea that sort of there's a plucky amateur standing up to the scientific establishment. That's a big trope. But that can be very dangerous. I mean, you look at for example, nonsense over vaccines and autism. I mean, one of the reasons why that sold as a story was because it was the idea that it was Andrew Wiles, this one plucky guy standing up to the vaccine people, and he gets his paper published in The Lancet, and suddenly all hell breaks loose. I mean, he's caused untold damage with that. And it's partly because people like to believe that. It's not just they believe that story. They like to believe that kind of story.
Like conspiracy theories really take off at times like this.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we've had some really dangerous ones lately. We've actually got ourselves into a situation where Homo sapiens, allegedly the smartest creature on the planet, is burning its own communication systems. Because why? Because they've read something on watched a late night YouTube video, and David Icke has told them that.
David Icke, yeah, he's big in England. I don't think he's taken off here quite so much.
I'm interested in conspiracy theories and the way they take off. Mm. This is a very rich time for me to be a scientist. In previous years, you had to be quite intrepid and go off and join apocalyptic cults to do the kind of stuff I do. But these days, just the internet is full of people just jumping over themselves to share their strange stories with you.
Yes, indeed. We won't even go there now, Rob. But just to say, thank you so much for taking the time. And we will come back to you later on in the year, because I'm sure you'll have other blogs that are coming out, articles of interest. And we'd love to catch up with you again and see the world from the psychologist's perspective.
Thanks. I've recently joined Twitter.
Very good. I'll follow you. Go on.
I'm still in two minds about whether that's a good idea. Like the blog, it's the idea is that there's meant to be some kind of non-mystifying dialogue so that people know what scientists get up to, mm-hmm. rather than being some weird... Because you guys are paying for us. You pay us to do this. You really ought to know what we're up to.
Yes. Well, if it's a good way of communicating with the masses, why not?
Well, I mean, also, it's not just masses, also my bosses. I mean, as I say, the taxpayers pay my salary.
Yes.
So I kind of have a right to know what we get up to.
Yes. Well, again, that's a good point to join Twitter and all the other social media, I suppose, tools that we have to share our work with everybody.
Sure.
Okay, Rob, thank you so much for taking our call. Enjoyed the chat, and we'll talk again soon.
Thanks a lot.
And there you were listening to Dr. Robert O'Brien from the School of Applied Psychology, and he was speaking about the hive mind and other psychological approaches to current issues such as COVID. We listened to on www.cry104fm.com, go to podcasts and click on Dr. Rosario Griffin Presenter Podcasts.